today's topic on healthy blue trees begin with the soil. And he asked me to come here to speak on natural farming a little bit and kind of what you can do with the materials at your feet to grow a better blue tree. So I'd like to share that with you today. So I want to start off by kind of introducing you to me. And like I said, my name's Drake. I'm standing in front. Okay. Thanks.
I'll stand over here.
Okay. So I was born in Hawaii, at Hilo Hospital in 1985. Lived here the majority of my life. I went to school at Montana State and actually got a degree in computer science. And at the time, I was not interested in farming or anything. I thought Cheetos and fruit juice were the best thing on earth. But then when I kind of got back here, I started to kind of connect more with nature. Realized there was a little bit more sustenance in my food. So I got interested in farming. And I just happened to have some of the most amazing people kind of come into my life during that time when I was trying to learn. And so these are my kind of mentors here in farming. And my dad, Eric Weiner, he started Planet White Fruit Tree Nursery back in the 1920s. Actually, the 70s. Many great fruit trees that you see around, they all have the new Planet White Fruit Tree Nursery on it. Grew up on a farm there, wasn't really interested in it then. Then I met Ginger John, who's my neighbor now, and he kind of introduced me to IMO, which is indigenous microorganisms, which is one aspect of this natural farming. And he's been organic farming for decades. I think he told me since before he was born. And he had some test plots where he tried his best organic mix versus some of this natural farming IMO, and it was over twice the size and twice the, and so through him I got in, met Dr. Park, who really kind of turned me on to the nutritional benefits, and how that by farming with natural farming you can really get the full food and the full nutrition, and that your medicine really comes from food. Then he turned me on to Master Cho, which I kind of think is, I take his name and say it's carbon, hydrogen, and oxygen, because those are the building blocks of life. And I saw this man bring a dead pig back to life when I was in Korea visiting him. He just got kind of a touch, like the magic, natural, mystic type of touch. So he's really been showing me a lot of this, and that's kind of where I based a lot of my natural farming teaching off of, these methods he's developed in Korea. Then when I got back from Korea, I met Gil Franklin, who showed me how to take these same methods and basically do them for next to nothing. If you have a machete, you can naturally farm, and Gil will show you how. I have a lot of his teachings in the way I do things, but Master Cho really has kind of a super superior way, a skilled way, it will get you there. But if you can afford it, I would definitely recommend going the extra mile to make it of Cho quality. And then just recently, I kind of got turned on to Elaine Ingram. She came through Hilo a couple months ago, and I got to see a very influential talk from her, where basically she took these mystical concepts that Cho came at from kind of like a biblical sense, and she came at it from the science sense. And to see the two mesh in like perfect harmony, I just know that, you know, this natural farming is where it's at. And she has a lot of good information on microbes and how to balance those and how to really make the environment thrive. So those are, that's kind of where my training and things have come from, my influences. Of course, there's plenty more. Every person I talk to, I learn the most when I'm teaching and talking to people. And, you know, just, I couldn't list everyone on here. So the main concept I want to convey today is that soil is more than just dirt. That if you look at the ground or you look at your orchard and you think, oh, it's just this inert substance that you're going to go out and kind of just dictate and make your way and do your thing, it's not quite that simple. It's a living material. It's all alive. And if you treat it properly, it'll pay you back like sevenfold, tenfold, hundredfold maybe. And so in a healthy soil, what you have is diverse microorganisms, which are microscopic pieces of life. They're kind of omnipresent everywhere on Earth. Leach bacteria is. As that system evolves, more fungus starts to come in. There's water and air in there that you cannot get in with mechanical killing. That if you try to fill your ground with air into it, you might that'd be like someone digging a huge Grand Canyon and saying we're giving water to everyone, versus where you're able to put in piping and bring it directly into your house where you need it. And that's what the microorganisms do in the soil. So they're able to bring air ducts and water ducts to where they need them in the soil. That's why it's important to have good soil. And organic matter and humus, which is from a plant just continually living there, it acts as a carbon battery, which really helps to keep the buffer your soil and also hold more nutrient holding capacity. There's a difference between organic material and organic matter, which is something I'm getting into recently. That organic matter is specifically humus, where it's broken down into carbon, just like oil is carbon, but it's different from a diamond, which is also carbon. That with heat and pressure in different environmental conditions, you can change the nature of this carbon. It has to be a very flexible element. And only through organic matter and humus, which is taking care of your soil and revitalizing, you actually get organic matter and humus. And the last thing that's kind of in dirt is rock minerals. And that's what most people would consider just dirt. And that's also a very vital model. So I want to go a little bit more into detail here on these concepts here. Then I'm going to go through making a fermented plant juice, which is a really simple, easy recipe that you can take home with you, and you can make fertilizer from what's at your own home garden, and you can get it back to your plant. You don't have to go to the fertilizer store. You just have to go buy a little bit of sugar or throw your own. And then the last part of that, this talk, I'm going to show you a little bit of my wound treatment and just a little lessons on those and what I've learned from them. I have a type of them, they're good enough. And they're going to start fruiting this year, one of them at least. So a little bit more in detail. Natural farming is really centered around the microbes because they're an indicator of how good your soil is. If they're thriving, that means you've done well. And it's what makes soil good. So it's kind of twofold on that. And what microorganisms are, there's more, like if you compare it to the tree of life, all plants and animals, all up here, all the diversity that you see around it, would be two branches or twigs on this tree. And the rest of life is microorganisms. They're kind of omnipresent, they're everywhere, they're so diverse that, and they're made up of bacteria, fungus, yeast, and other little things you can see if you have a microscope, or you can feel if you're that intuitive. And one of the benefits of microorganisms is that they're very diverse, which makes them very robust. So in a multitude of situations, if they like this condition, they'll thrive. But if conditions change, other microbes will kind of come in to fill the gaps. And their diversity is what makes them so robust and creates an immune system. So I heard Ian talking about the different plants that are growing under his trees. And he said that mahonohono was coming in pretty heavy. And one of the reasons is that the your microbes actually dictate what plants will naturally want to sprout in an area. And when you start to grow trees, you'll notice honohono will start to grow. And that's happening because your environment is becoming more fungal. So that means as you have bacteria and fungus, which are basically the two main subgroups of microorganisms, and then trees tend to like a more fungal environment. So when you start to plant a tree, the microbes will actually dictate what other further plants are going to want to live in that area. And so I don't get soil samples. I just look at the weeds you have on the ground, and I can tell what nutrients are there, because I can tell what microbes are there from just looking at the plants you have. Okay. Can you ever see that behind me? I did this presentation the other time, it was kind of small. And one of the other important aspects of microbes is that they're just-in-time feeders, that they live right in the root zone. So that if I go out with a bag of chemical fertilizer and I try to put it out, it's only going to be active for the first 7 days. Then after that, nature tries to take this high-energy substance, which obviously has a lot of energy in it, and it starts to calcify it in ways and tie it up so that it's not as readily available. And so if you throw a bag, if you throw a handful of chemical fertilizer that's only available for 7 days, the way that it becomes more available to your plants is the microbes start to process. And so what you can do is you can get it directly in the root zone. You full fit your microbes that are in the soil, and they do that same function that they'll take whatever nutrients they find to make them water soluble as the plant wants it. So they're able to transfer that across. So you're not throwing a pile of expensive fertilizer out there and then hoping the plant will accept it. You just let the microbes at the time the plant needs it free it up and make it water soluble. And they intentionally keep them non-water soluble so the water would wash all your nutrients away if it wasn't there at the right time. And the microbes work very well with the plant to keep that in check. And also, I was kind of talking earlier about the immune system, that's what your health, human health even, is very dictated by microbes. That when you have strong beneficial microbes in you, like I have strep throat, in everyone's throat, but just when your microbes are compromised, then it becomes and it takes over. It becomes active and takes over. And so by having good microbes out there, it keeps everything in check and everything in balance. And the more diversity and the more you have, the more resilience you are able to cultivate. And so they really kind of dictate the immune system of an orchard or a farm. And this picture here is from the Total Advanced Seminar. And this is Myog. We might know Myog. We have Siga and Taika. They have a farm down on Papaya Farms Road. And this is IMO in that box. And this is white, wispy type of mold that we intentionally cultivate, because this is the beneficial microorganism. So IMO, there's a lot of different IMOs, but when you hear IMO talked about in natural farming, they're specifically talking about this microorganism here. And I want to bring up the point that the rainfall and the wind bring a lot of nutrients. That a lot of times we go and we try to put all our nutrients where our plants are and make them all good and baby them a little bit. But look at this Ogilla tree just growing the rocks. I mean, for sure, I'm sure you've all seen that, where there's no one there taking care of it and it's still thriving. And that's because in Hawaii, our basalt lava rock has tons of nutrients. But what it needs is a different ion to unlock it. And what happens is rainwater has a positive charge, and it also contains oxygen, which helps to free up these nutrients, which are just in the rock. And so a lot of people in Puna say, oh, I'm in that rock. What do I do? How do I get this nutrition in there? Well, your nutrition is in your rock. So if you just build up a little bit or a little bit of soil to act as an aggregate, you've got majority of your nutrients there already. And one of the keys with rainfall and why it's so important, so vital for plants, is that it contains 8% oxygen, and roots live on oxygen. They breathe on oxygen. So if you sit there with your gardening hose, which has 0% oxygen, and you water your lawn or your plant, they'll die within a few hours. They'll drown, basically. But if it rains for days and days, as it does here, your plants look happier, and they don't die from drowning, right? And that's because of the oxygen content in the rain. And that's just a very vital thing. That you can also make oxygenated water in certain ways. One way to do is making a vortex in a bucket of water to oxygenate your water. But it's of the most important thing, oxygen to your roots. And also, the wind can bring nutrients from really far away. You guys are familiar with the nuclear thing in Fukushima and radiation coming over here to Hawaii. And that's just one example of how particles can get embedded in the air and travel vast distances. That it's not just radiation, there's also sulfur from China and all kinds of things. But there's a lot of nutrients in the air, and that they collect on the leaves, and then when it rains, they'll rip them and go down to the root zone, where the plant can then metabolize them and get them into the microorganisms and replenish just from the air, from the wind bringing things from vast distances. And I like, because this is natural farming, I like to talk about what's naturally there already and tell you that you're already all natural farmers, so just smell it out, it's all good. But one of the interesting things that I see is a lot of people worry about the nutrients in the ground and competition of different things, stealing my nutrients and things like that. But if you look, you see that big tree there behind us? See how big and massive, and it's like, looks like a lot. Only 4% of that tree came out of the ground. The other 96% of that tree came out of the air. It took carbon dioxide, water, and sunlight infused together in a chemical reaction to make that tree. And only a little bit of the earth minerals kind of act as a core nucleus to that to those particles. And so a lot of your nutrition can just come from by spacing things a little bit further apart so they get plenty of light, by making sure that there's adequate water, that oxygenated water, and making sure they get air. Like they like to breathe. You know, if you're all stuck next to someone who's not so comfortable, but you got plenty of air, it's a little bit more comfortable to grow and thrive. Like I was saying, Hawaii has super fertile rock. Right? You're just really blessed with the rock that you have here. If you've been to Hawaii and you notice the rock, like, it's kind of like dirt already. You just like hit it and it's a little shattered. Big islands like that too, you know, we're just a couple million years younger. And so what happened on Hawaii is there's just a bunch of this oxygenated water, which is pulling out the silica, which is glass. And it pulls the silica out, and then it just leaves the minerals behind. And that's the same thing you can do to activate your natural rock minerals. Another thing is that it's kind of hard to hold the nutrients here because we have so much rain, which is why it's so important to have, in combination with your rock material, to have organic humus in there. And that's what they're going to do this month here, which is complementary plants that a lot of times in orchard is just, you know, your tree and nothing else. And this is kind of what Ian was getting to at the end of his talk, where he's talking about planting more agroforestry. I'm sure Craig will go a lot more into this. But planting things like pigeon pea, lyricidia, a bunch of those things, to kind of create more of a natural polyculture than in the forest. There's always a bunch of things together doing their thing, and because, just like microorganisms, diversity is the key. That, you know, I like apple pie, but that person doesn't, and so we gotta work together to get enough pie for everyone. And all your leaves are serving a purpose. Like nature abhors a bare surface. You ever, like, you see the pavement and stuff, as soon as people stop driving on it, what happens? Plants crawl on it, they're like trying to like get back on it. If you ever make a place on your land and make it dirt, you know, or strip off the plant, it's so the weeds come back as fast as they can to get there. And so the weeds are kind of protecting the surface and getting through there. And so they're beneficial in a lot of ways. So I recommend, instead of looking at them as weeds, look at them as like friends and companion plants. And the more you put your microorganisms in there, the more your plants will change. At that point I was making earlier, that I can tell what your soil is from your weeds. The same way that if you stop looking at it like as weeds, if you just start getting your soil better, your weeds will change and your purpose will change. Instead of protecting them, I'll be in production mode, which goes better. And charcoal and harvest store buildup, that's why there's multiple plants, because they're all falling. They're trying to build up this battery of storage so that they can buffer things. Because if you have no buffer, you go here, there, it's really radical. But if you have a nice buffer, it's easy, you know, more of a smooth line. And so nature really likes that. It's trying to find a home and space with life. And also when plants fall, they do fermentation. And this is just, so fermentation is a sophisticated word for rotting. And so when a tree falls in the forest, it just rots in place and through a fermentation process. And in natural farming, we use this process specifically here that I'm going to show you in a minute on how to really make, take this and enhance what's naturally occurring. And I always like to talk about bugs because bugs are my friends, especially spiders are my best friends. And they serve a purpose. I have this story about I had tomatoes in my greenhouse and one of them had a bunch of white flies eating it. And my dad was like, oh, you better rip that out. They're going to spread to your other plants. And I was like, I didn't get around to it for a while. I just kind of watched it. And what was happening is that tomatoes don't really like direct rain on them. They don't like a ton of moisture. This tomato plant was by the door. And because it was getting so much moisture, it was wet, it was stressed, and the white fly recognized that. They came in, they ate it, they removed it from the situation so there wasn't this stress in the environment. And as soon as they ate that plant, they didn't move on to the rest, they left. And so they serve a very vital purpose. And if you look at the insects that way and realize if there's a bunch of insects eating your plants, they're probably really stressed. So there's a root problem or a soil situation that needs to be addressed. And I love this quote here at the bottom of my dad saying, I used to have a lot of pets, now I don't have a lot of bugs. So he's just changed his mindset on it. Now he's a lot happier and more performing. And so he's doing pretty good on time here, I think. So I want to talk to you. That was kind of like a brief introduction to like the concepts that we're working with in natural farming. Now I want to talk specifically like the grit of the recipes and get down to it. And if you're preparing a new orchard for root planting, I did a really good talk, I thought it was really good, and people said it was really good, but on soil foundation at the last natural farming meeting. And so because this time is short, as opposed to reiterating a bunch of it, I'd rather just point you to this Google short link that I have up here. And that's it's Z1 capital Z F2. It's not an I number. That's Google's short link. It takes you this really long row around. But there's an MP3 recording. It's about a 2-hour talk. So there's two MP3s there. And then my slides are also in a PDF, which is really nice. You can check that out. I really recommend starting up there. But that aside, this is like a subsection of that. So if you want the complete picture, go there. It's not even complete. I'm still learning. Specifically on indigenous microorganisms, or IMO, which is available at KTA, Dr. Park built it, and he also sells it in bulk. You can get it directly from him. And if you have it and you want to use it, and it's probably one of the easiest things you can do, and you can mess up by 50% and still get 100% results, which is probably one of the only farming systems that I can vouch for, that you can mess up by 50% and still win. But the dilution for that is that you just spread it. It's a soil, soil amendment type of thing. And you just spread it about 5 pounds per 100 square feet. And that will really help to get all the other microorganisms that are naturally there. The IMO is like college educated, super leadership people that come in and just all the other people that are just like, okay, I know what to do here. You there, you build these air ducts, let's get this water system going, and it just revitalizes your soil. And that's why it works. You don't need much. But what they do is, as they start to go into the soil, as they die, they'll start to provide nutrients. And you can get like a complete NPK type fertilizer just from these guys. They'll do it all themselves. At the right time, in harmony with the plant, without taking it into these crazy extremes. I also, you see this picture on the right here? This is I grow a lot of hollow, and this is an older picture when I was still experimenting. The hollow on your left side, it has no IMO. The hollow on the right side has IMO. Just to show you, like, that's just IMO. And I did put wood chips down there too. So wood chips and IMO, but there was no other soil amendment done to this other than it was double dug. And that's just to show you kind of it can be that drastic from just adding a little bit of IMO to your soil, and that's at 5 pounds. And I really recommend that, what I'm trying to do is create more of a fungal environment, because higher life forms tend to like more fungus in comparison to bacteria. So the bulb rises at the same time, but as it rises, you want your fungal to come up more and more and more in proportion. And so wood chips and woody material really help to increase that that fungal potential there, because they'll feed on it, they'll feed on the lichen and everything in there, and they love it. And I also recommend high quality biochar, which I don't have time to go into the talk in detail about that, but there's different ways of making it. Just like I was saying, oil is carbon, so the diamond is carbon. There's a lot of different ways to make it with different heat and pressures and environments. But a high quality biochar really helps to soak up toxins that are in the soil and also buffer and balance things. And you don't need much, about 2 pounds per 100 square feet. And you can even go lighter than that, it'll help, but that's like kind of like low minimum. And it also helps, not that we really need moisture retention here, but if you're growing in a drier zone, it really helps hold moisture in, because the microbes will take water out of the air at night during the dew point, store it in the charcoal, and then during the day it'll put it back into the plant. And so you minimize or eliminate the need for irrigation with the use of biochar and charcoal. So on a new orchard, that's what I kind of recommend. You come in, you put some IMO down, you put some wood chips, you check out the soil foundation, and it will really help. And then on existing orchards, this is one of my blue trees here. And I'm not the most proud of this guy, but it's just growing in a pasture. And so a lot of the orchards that I've seen typically are grass underneath and just kind of living in a more like unnatural environment. You wouldn't be, like a blue tree in a forest, it wouldn't be surrounded by grass. It would be, with other plants. And so if I grow in a grass field, I kind of got to do different substitutions to it. So again, putting the soil foundation down. If I change this grass here to more of a woody type of environment, it's going to make my job easier. It's just naturally going to thrive better. And what you can do is, when if you have an old tree that's kind of haggard and you want to like give it a little bit of life, you can make this fermented planters, which Mike, you want to come up here. Mike is a CHOE certified natural farmer too, and he's going to help me make this fermented plant juice. But you can use the fermented plant juice and spray it on in a dilution of 1 to 500. You really need that light dilution. Like I said, 96% of the plant is from the air, so you don't need a ton of a lot of minerals. That light dilution is enough to get nutrients in there, and you'll see a dramatic change. And also, if you're in old sugar land or land that's been not treated so well, there's ways using seawater that actually the minerals in the seawater are probably one of the least expensive ways in Hawaii to dilute it, 1 to 30, and put it out there. It's the same salinity as plant blood, so you're not going to oversalt your land. And if you apply it 3 times over like every two weeks, you apply it 3 times. I did it to one of my pastures, and now the pigs just ravaged that area. Why? Because it brought the grubs and it brought the worms and it brought the life back to the soil. And the worms wanted to feed it, and now the pigs know, and they go there, and now kind of like, oh man, why did I do that? But they love it. And so I want to show you just a quick recipe, because this is something everyone can do at home. And so what I have here is a bunch of comfrey that I harvested this morning. And some brown sugar, a jar, and something to mix it in. And Mike is going to do that. So the basic process of what he's going to do is first he's going to shred it. Oh, I just do it again. It's too dangerous. I use this to harvest. It's a really good tool. He's shredded about, pan size width, and get it in there. And you don't want to shred it or like chip it or like really break it. But you want to break it into like that size there. Then what he's going to do is, after he's got that bowl filled, he's going to mix in some brown sugar. And we use brown sugar because it is pretty natural and it has an osmotic property that when you rub it up against this plant material, it's going to osmotically pull the cell liquid through without rupturing them. So basically what it does is it pulls all the good through, but it leaves like the junk stuff behind. And that enables us to then ferment it and ferment the liquid, which then takes all this, like kind of the fermentation process makes it water soluble. So that the nutrients that came out of the cell wall into the sugar liquid are then water soluble and can go back into the plant and are acceptable. And so, yeah, that's plenty for now. And then there's a cup measure in there. And so if you see how much material he has here, he's going to add about two cups into that. And I kind of, there's like a recipe on like, this much to that much, but I find that if you follow it to the T, you'll be wrong because different plants have different amounts of moisture content in them. And so now that he's got the sugar in there, what he's going to do is loam it and mix it until, if you see the plant material, I don't know if you can see it very well from there, but it's kind of dry. Watch as he mixes it. The liquid is going to emerge. And once you got it so it's kind of liquidy, then that's, again, the stuff coming across the cell wall. That's what we want to have happen. And notice he's not like shredding it or like really smashing it or anything. He's just like working it and brings it out in there. And then after that, he's gonna pack it in a jar and then we'll let it ferment, which it takes about 3 to 5 days, even 7 days to ferment. Typically, I go 5 days with a ferment like this. and see how it's liquid. He didn't have any water, that liquid came out of the cell wall. And then he's kind of packed it in a jar. Okay, cool. You want to get on back too? So, and you want to fill it 2/3 full. 2/3 because 2/3 is a very common ratio in life. It kind of follows, it approximates the golden ratio, but it's like from my mouth to my nose to the ear is like 2/3 of the length of my ear. But it all life, you'll notice, grows into 2/3 or golden ratio, which is approximated by that. And so, yeah, you make another baptism, I recommend you do it, just like you're doing it in the baptism. And that 2/3 creates a little microcosm. The air above kind of holds the holy element, and the plant matter below kind of cooks, and ancient people used to call it cooking, when fermentation happens. It starts to bubble and almost boil, which is actually just CO2 being released, but I like to think of it as boiling. And then you want to put it in a dark area and cover it just like this. I just put a t-shirt and put some metal ring and just put it over. And that way it can still breathe. But it's isolated, but it has its own microcosm in there, but it can still breathe. So while you're doing that, I'm gonna move on a little bit and show you about my room. So these are my three root trees that I have growing in ornament. I planted the one in the middle a long time ago. I think it's maybe 3 or 4 years old. But it hasn't been taken care of that well up until recently. About 2 years ago or so, I went down and I put some IMO on it. And as you can tell, and these other ones are about a year old. It's doing really well. Starting to throw fruit for the first time in fruit, so I'm really excited. And I went down to take care of it yesterday when I went to go take these pictures. And it's throwing out two little babies too. And so under this tree, I found IMO growing naturally. So I inoculated it a couple years ago, but since I inoculated it, that system is still there, it's still thriving. And you see this white stuff right here on the leaf? That's the IMO. It's the same stuff. It's that wispy white stuff that I'm looking for. And this was just right under there. So I know that it's already doing its thing. Like my system, like they're working for me now. And if you take a close up on my soil here, you see how the soil is kind of turning to these balls and getting like that? This is a good sign that my bacterial to fungal ratio is up. The bacteria makes small grains of dirt or soil. But as fungus comes in, they start to roll them into these big macro structures. Like they make like mega city type things. And you see all the liquid on the top too? All coming out of the cell wall. Osmotic pressure. And so this is a good sign that my soil and that my fungal ratio is also coming up here. And that it's doing its thing. And if I wrote that there, it's a pretty natural understory. I didn't take out my stuff, as he was saying, to clean it out underneath. My theory on this is instead to actually inoculate with beneficial microbes, so that things like Phytophthora and whatever pathogenic things are going to be there, they don't have a chance. Just like the strep throat that's in my throat. Thanks, Mike. Beautiful job. So, you see you guys can start there? Because it's this easy. It took, 5 minutes? Yeah. So I go with the beneficial microbes, and that's really the thing that I'm trying to cultivate. And they keep everything else in check, and they do their thing, and the natural understory provides leaf matter and things for them to eat, and kind of keep the ecosystem going. Also, this stick was like a couple feet away from underneath the tree. And as you can see, it's a mushroom, and it's fruiting, which means it's healthy mushroom. And I have, by seeing this, I know that I have diverse microorganisms in there. not just my IMO, I got this other whatever this fungus is, I don't know. And that's a really good sign. The more diversity I have, the stronger the immune system is going to be, and the better the whole field is going to get. And my theory is that I surrounded the bottom of top wood. But I came to this tree, and there's an African tulip growing right up next to it, and my cornea growing on the other side. And I chopped them down yesterday in the pouring rain, and it was a lot of fun. And I chopped them up, and I put them under. And the reason I did that is because all that fungus is going to eat this and turn it into the nutrients that my tree is then going to eat and love. And so I'm growing my tree by just feeding it other trees. So, yeah, that agroforestry of growing other things in your vicinity is chop and drop. Like, I didn't have to bring mulch from anywhere. I just went next to my tree and just chopped it down, and boom, I'm feeding my tree. And this is the myconium I'm talking about on the left. I took two of the, I stood in the same spot and took the same picture, but in the meantime, I chopped down a tree. And the tree was crowded before, and it wasn't getting good sunlight, but I chopped it down, put it under the tree, and now it has plenty of access to sunlight to get what it needs to air and everything. It's really easy to do. And so that's kind of my blue tree. So now that we got the ferment here, I want to talk about using it in a little bit more detail. If you go home and you do this recipe, which, how many cups of sugar do you use? Okay, so you use a little less than 4 cups of sugar with, you know, a little bit of plant material to fill a half-gallon jar. So, and once you made it, you know, it takes a little time to make it. Once you made it, you get a liquid that looks like this. And this is a finished product. And this pour-off came from a 5-gallon bucket, so you can do it in larger buckets if you need to, if you're making bigger batches. But you get a bunch of liquid just like this. It's really nice. I brought a bunch of little cups and things that we can all sample. You can drink it. It's great for human health. Delicious stuff if you're into ferment. And so even though there's liquid in there now, it's not useful yet. It needs to go and do that fermentation process for a few days for them to then become water-soluble and plant-available. And this form is plant-available and also shelf-stable. So what I do is after the week, I'll pour off the liquid and then discard the solids. You can compost them or do whatever you want with them. But then I'll take one extra cup of sugar and put it into my liquid. And what this does is it arrests the fermentation. So that means it's not going to further ferment. And there's a couple ways to arrest fermentation. One way is more sugar. And by doing that, it doesn't turn vinegary. It stays nice and sweet and good. And you get a really high quality ferment that way. But to use this, I dilute it from 1 to 500. With natural water, which I love that word. But what I mean by that is like rainwater or something. You don't want to use chlorinated water or, you know, whatever. Like the more closer to nature you get the water, the better it's going to be. And then you spray this directly on your plant in the evening. And the smaller the particle size you get, it's going to feed the microorganisms that are on the leaves of your plant. But it's also going to directly feed your plant. And so you can do this. People ask me, oh, you know, how often can you do it? You can do it like weekly if you wanted to. But what I find is that when you do it, just take a few weeks and observe the effect of your
plant. Big one. Want to
see? Yeah, come on. Okay. So this is my last slide, by the way. So I'm all good on that. And especially use it during the growing stage. Like it'll revitalize old plants, but it'll also kind of it's good during the growing stage. It's not necessarily the best when it's fruiting, although it's not the end of the world to use this. There are other better things. And also this has a bunch of different uses, more than I can enumerate right now with limited time. And so If you want more natural farming, naturalfarminghawaii.net, pretty good website. My email is there. Also, we have a meeting in Hilo the second Tuesday of the month. And that's pretty good too. A lot of time I get the soil foundation lecture and things. And also, I just wanted to kind of throw this in here because I got an audience. Is that March 10th, we're doing a Harvest Fest in Hilo. We've been doing natural farming on the streets of Hilo. You notice all the olive oil sprouting up there. Myself and a few friends have been loving olive oil and letting olive oil love us. And we want to invite you to get in on the fun, free food, great music, March 10th, 2 p.m. Yeah. Thank you.
Where
are you? Right on Maho and Kilauea. Maho Street and Kilauea, like one block south of the Hilo Farmers Market. I don't know, which is not the best answer, but it's because it's been moving around, and if you'd like to find out more, check out naturalfarminghawaii.net. As soon as I get that info, it'll be there. So, I'm not going to take any questions, so thank you. If you have questions, talk to me after.